Let's all breathe ourselves into presence. Just take three conscious breaths. Notice the breath going in and out. And let's take a deep in breath. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. We just made the sound of Om together. That sound has a name, and the name is Om. It's also represented by characters, and up on the screen you see the Sanskrit character for Om. And in English it's OM, isn't it? So there's OM and there's the Sanskrit. We're going to look at the Bhagavad Gita today, the Song of the Lord. This will be the third Sunday we looked at this particular verse. Jumping right in, it's chapter 17, 23. The three words that represent the absolute are, that represent spirit or God in this tradition. The three words are, what are they? Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. These are Sanskrit words. Om meaning Om. Tat meaning that, and Sat meaning truth. Om, that's the truth. Om, that's the truth. Out of these three words, according to the scripture, arose the spiritual wisdom. The scriptures and self-sacrifice, in being of service, being selfless in our actions. We have another creation myth, don't we, in the Bible. It took 7 days, God created this. God created that. So here is another way of looking at creation. The three words that represent the absolute are Om Tat Sat. Out of this arose the spiritual wisdom, scriptures, and self-sacrifice. Rav Russ talked about God today. I want to relate what he said to this scripture. Look at a bit of commentary, and then we're going to jump ahead. Om Tat Sat is a mantra. Om Tat Sat. A mantra is simply words that we repeat to ourselves to return ourselves to a state of grace. There are many words we can choose as a mantra, if we choose to have one at all. I find it useful when my mind runs away to repeat some holy words to return me to a state of peace or a state of grace. There's a choice. Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. Om, the sound itself, is the truth. Tat means that. Sat means truth. And then this incredible affirmation, the first manifestation of the absolute truth, takes form as the unspoken sound, Om. Before there were humans around to speak it or think it, the first manifestation of the Absolute Truth, which we also call God or Spirit, takes form. That truth takes form as the unspoken sound, Om. Om. We say that God is everywhere. Rev. Ross talked today about God being everywhere, and here inside of us, all of us. We can also think as Om being everywhere. Everywhere. We can think of Mother Earth vibrate, the sound of Om. We can think of the whole universe as vibrating with the sound of Om. We can think of ourselves vibrating the sound of Om. Some people have the ability to look at others and see auras, see light. Can you look at others and see them vibrating with the divine sound, Om? Om. Can you experience yourself vibrating with the divine sound, Om? I have a little exercise I thought we might do at the beginning and then relate to it as we go on. I like exercises, they make things more personal. Are we ready for a little exercise? Exercise is simple. We're going to envision Mother Earth with both feet on the floor as full of the sound of Om. And we're going to envision ourselves, bodies full of the sound of Om. And we're going to envision the whole universe, the sky, the heavens, full of the sound of Om. To facilitate this vision, the exercise is going to go like this. As we breathe in, the sound of Om from Mother Earth. Fill our bodies, the sound of Om, and exhaust it into the universe. With an in-breath. With an out-breath, we suck in the sound of Om from the universe, and fill our bodies, and fill Mother Earth with the sound of Om. You got it? So with the in-breath, draw in, suck in from Mother Earth, the sound of Om. We fill our bodies and fill the universe. With our out-breath, we suck in the sound of Om from the universe and fill our bodies and then fill Mother Earth. So breathing in the sound of Om, bodies, universe. Sucking in the sound of Om, bodies, Mother Earth, on your own. So we've had a bit of intellectual information. Om Tat Sat. Om, that's the truth. Om Tat Sat. And we had some experiential information. God. I thought, let's see here. I thought this would be a good time, being somewhat improvisational, to bring up a slide that Rev Rush showed us today and relate it to Om. Om, which is God. God is Om, Om is God. They are the same. And I'm doing this to enable us to take a look at some spiritual truths from a new vantage point, or a new perspective. Sometimes when you shine a different colored light on a spiritual truth, it shows up a little differently and we get more deeply in touch with the truth. So let's see if that's true for us. I'm not sure. Here we go. Okay. There we go. This is what Russ put up on the screen today. I don't know if we can read it or not. He said it was the affirmation that they used in their church, first Unity Church she joined. God is all, both visible and invisible. One presence, one mind, one power is all. This one that is all is perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. We just had an experience of substance, didn't we? I am ever one with this perfection. What would it be like if we took one of the many names of God and substituted it for God here? Om is all. Om is all, both visible and invisible. Om. Om, one presence. Om, one mind. Om, one power is all. This one, this Om, that is all, is perfect life. Om, that is all, is perfect life. This one, this Om, that is all, is perfect love. Om. This one, that is all, is perfect substance. Om. All the substance of the universe, including ourselves, all of Mother Earth. This Om that is all is perfect substance. I am ever one with this Om, this perfection. I am ever one with this Om. Just a way of shining a little different light on a spiritual truth. Any comments before we go on? Questions?
That exercise was helpful because you could feel it. You could feel the vibration. I could feel the vibration. It's good. Feel the vibration in the affirmation.
Yeah, sometimes when I hear the word God bandied about a lot, it sort of goes in one ear and out the other. Not sure why that is. Perhaps just over repetition. For me, it's helpful to have other names for the Absolute. Om works well for me. Somehow it's more grounding. for me. And then I can go back to God. Let's see, how do I, oh, here we go. All right. So the true Om is the hum. There are three parts to Om. Ah, Om. The true Om is the third part. When people repeat this mantra, Om Tat Sat, they should stress the the humming part of the mantra. That hum is the very first sound or the first word, which is God. Another way of looking at God. And from our Christian scriptures, the Bible says, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In the beginning was the Word Om. The Word Om was with God. The Word Om was God. And it still is God. And Satchitananda says, don't worry about the grammar. The spirit of scriptural wisdom is more important than taking every letter literally. The word itself is God. Let's see, I thought at this point I might jump a little ahead since we've covered some of this material before. Let's see what's next. All right. As we think and speak, so we become. As we, our unity principle. As we think and speak, so we become. And one of the things we speak and hear is Om. The words we speak. We take on the qualities of what we talk about. And what we hear our little voice saying to us. That is why, and here Satchitananda has some practical advice, if we keep talking about others' problems, we will be filled with problems. Now he's going beyond Om and God being the same. He's talking about all of our utterances, the whole gambit of our utterances. Where do our utterances begin? In our minds. Sometimes we just react and say things, but those reactions are stored up in our minds. Sometimes we blurt them out, our reactions. If we keep talking about others' problems, we will be filled with problems. Sometimes we don't see the best in others. Instead, we constantly think terrible things about them. Terrible things about them. Too seldom do we praise people for what happens. The more we think and talk of undesirable things, the more we become that. There's an issue, we talked about this last week, Jan thought of the idea that if we don't stand up for the Jews and they take them away, and then we don't stand up for the other Mexicans, the Gypsies, they take them away, don't stand for them, who will stand for us? When they come for us. Remember you shared that with us last week. Implying that we should do something sometimes. When we experience outrage or injustice, and yet the more we think and talk of undesirable things, the more we become that. I think it's useful to distinguish the two voices that we all have within us. I mean, not really, we're one, but we can think the two voices. We're all familiar with the little I, the small I, our mind. That's where reside our resentments, our angers, also our love and enthusiasms. Most of those things reside there, not the small I. All our feelings and emotions. Also all of our reactive thoughts. In some ways we're the same as Pavlov's dogs. When a certain whistle is blown, we salivate just like those dogs did. It's in our reactive minds. Where is that? It's in our minds, our little I. We also have another voice within us, which we'll call the capital I, or the capital S self, or spirit. One of the differences I notice between the two voices is one talks a lot. And little eyes giving me advice constantly. This is what you ought to do. This is the right thing to do. That's the wrong thing to do. They're wrong. You're right. Do this. You're right to feel outraged. They're wrong. They're doing. You deserve the love you're receiving. So on. Talking all the time with messages. Whereas the big I doesn't talk all the time, does it? The big I is not a talker. Rather, the big I comes up and speaks to us through grace. If we've shut down our little I now so that we can hear it, so that through grace, we can discover what is ours to do. Through grace, we discover what is ours to do. And when we are acting through grace, our actions are not based on resentment. Our actions aren't based on enthusiasm. Our actions aren't based on outrageous anger. Our actions aren't based on a desire for an outcome. I want to fix this situation. I'm going to do this to fix. I don't like what's going on here. This is wrong. I'm going to do this and fix that situation. That's all part of little I. The big I knows that when God created the world, just now, He created it in perfection. Perfection. It's in the Bible. God created the world. It wasn't 7,000 years ago. Right now, He just created it. She did. Om created the world just now in perfection. Our little I has difficulty seeing this and argues about it, our logical capabilities. And yet, it's not ours to suppress our little I. It's a wonderful resource, our intellect. And we should use it wisely and with discernment, recognizing when it's giving us good advice. And we're not. Rev. Russ talked about this today, our thoughts and our mind. He said half of them aren't true. Isn't that what he said? So how can we develop the discernment to let spirit guide us, and not follow our reactive self. That's the challenge, that each of us needs to find a personal path. I believe that if we try and suppress our thoughts or our minds, that's not going to be helpful. They'll still be back there talking. So somehow we need to fully feel and understand all the thoughts that we have without embedding them in our hearts and repeating them over and over again. Acknowledge them without incorporating them into who we are. And through that acknowledgement, we open the door for our capital S self, capital I, through grace, to let us, we're not even told, we just feel, oh, this is what's mine to do. From a grounding in peace, which is joy, grounding in peace. And through that grounding in peace, allowing grace to move through us, even though we experience unfortunate, unhappy, unjust things, we ourselves are not rattled by them, because we look at them from a deeper perspective. What happens, Satchitananda says, when we don't see the best in others? This is a challenge when there are others who are doing things we don't approve of and think are wrong. Doesn't mean we support what they're doing, but somehow it's hard to see the best. We constantly think terrible things about them, and we hear the terrible things they seem to think about us. His recommendation is, too seldom do we praise people. Or perhaps at a more basic level, too seldom do we look to see the divine Om that that person is, and respect that, no matter what they're saying or doing. What happens if we think and talk of undesirable things again and again and again after acknowledging them? The more we become that. So there's some discernment here, isn't there? Not to reject the way our minds are, but yet not to get attached to our reactive thoughts. He says, at least for our own safety, we should not constantly be speaking ill of others. Everybody has a little weakness, but if we keep talking about it, we become that, ultimately. Seems counterintuitive by noticing the weakness or what's wrong with someone else. It's one thing to be aware of it, acknowledge it, but another thing to keep talking about it. He says that through our humanity, somehow we become that.
When you say he says,
Satchitananda.
Satchitananda.
This is a commentary on the Gita by Satchitananda. The Greek, the spiritual teacher.
Oh. It's pacifism, then.
Ah, not at all.
Well, I mean, you know, by profession, I keep criticizing other people and attacking them, and things happen as a result. I do the opposite. And I do get accolades for that, and I do get change, and people's health does improve. So it's a very, very different way of approaching things. But it sounds very much like pacifism, because if you don't speak out, then it's, you know, we hear that all the time in the news. People not speaking out.
He recommends you speak out.
At least for our own safety. Well, you know, I said, well, that's definitely looking for your own safety first. You shouldn't. You should ignore concerns for your own safety.
That's a different kind of safety.
I'm talking about physical safety.
He's talking about spiritual safety.
Well, I think they're all one.
Well, he's just referring to spiritual safety here, I believe, not physical. And he recommends action. He's a strong proponent of action. He's a peaceful man, but I wouldn't call him a pacifist. It depends on the consciousness from which our action emerges. His philosophy is, if our actions emerge from a consciousness of anger, outrage, being right, being wrong, we may find that the action we perform is not with the highest good of all concern. And rather, if we can act from our deeper spiritual self, and even though we are acting in strong, assertive ways,
Did he ever do anything like that? Speak out assertively? Organize?
Oh yes, very much
on
so.
On what kinds of issues?
Not harsh to get into that now, but I will say he was a very strong activist. His message is, where are we acting from? Are we acting from our reactive personalities, or are we, he's going to talk about this in just a few minutes.
So he does see a difference between a little weakness and a huge threat. Everybody has a little weakness. Not everybody is a huge threat.
Right. So he's talking about a situation where there's a little weakness, and there could be other situations where there's a huge threat. In most of our daily dealings, we're not dealing with huge threats, are we? That's another topic. In most of our daily, practical, everyday lives, we're dealing with others, our family members, our work compadres. And he states, if we constantly speak ill of those, everybody has a little weakness. If we keep talking about the problems of our family, our work associates, people in our immediate consciousness, he says we become that ultimately. He wants to start from who we are with in a moment. He's not addressing larger issues of people somewhere else who are doing things we disagree with. He's starting with
those people. But you should be in your consciousness of the here and now, being in these bigger issues to begin with, rather than people. So he's assuming people are at a lower state. That's his premise, that you're in a very low state, and you're only, the only people you would even begin to criticize are family or whatever.
I don't hear that, but I respect that you were hearing that.
Yeah.
I don't hear that, and I respect that you were hearing that.
It's kind of like the make love, not war. You know, stay away from battles.
I didn't hear him say that. But I respect that you may hear that. His message is, whether we are fighting a battle and slicing off our enemies' heads, can we do that from a consciousness of somehow inner peace?
I think so.
That's his message. So if you hear that, you got it.
Okay.
But if we are constantly speaking ill of others, if we think of people as being enemies instead of common human beings just like we are, then when we chop off their heads and we do it from a consciousness of anger and enemies and people who are not, don't have an inherent value as we do, we will suffer for it. So for our own safety, he recommends that we have the proper spiritual consciousness and are guided from that in whatever we do, even acts of violence. I thought we'd do a little divine light exercise now. Just a way of looking at the world in general. I'll put this up on the screen and I'll read it. We'll repeat it together a few times. And you can close your eyes if you wish and do it silently. Here we go. I'll repeat it myself. Divine light is doing its perfect work in this situation now for the highest good of all concerned. If you'd like to join me, let's repeat this together three times. Divine light is doing its perfect work in this situation now for the highest good of all concerned. Divine light is doing its perfect work in this situation now for the highest good of all concerned. A third time. Divine light is doing its perfect work in this situation now for the highest good of all concerned. And now, if you're able, close your eyes and repeat it to yourself once out loud with me and then silently. Divine light is doing its perfect work in this situation now for the highest good of all concerned. And repeat it to yourself three times. Questions or observations or comments about the experience of the exercise?
I just need to print that out and put it where I can see it all the time. That's why I took a picture.
Divine light is doing its perfect work in this situation now for the highest good of all concerned.
He wasn't saying that for any situation in particular at the time, just in general, right?
Whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
A situation of violence, perhaps. A situation of peacefulness, a situation of conflict. A situation with extreme differences in opinions. Characteristic of our political atmosphere today, I believe. Other questions or comments? it's a little long, you can use this as a mantra. During the day, if your mind wanders into reactive thoughts and you notice negative feelings arising in you, angers, resentments, grudges, you can use words like this, divine light is doing its perfect work in this situation now for the highest good of all concerned. I find when I do that, a new light shines on the situation I've been dealing with. A new light shines there. And I'm sometimes able to hold a situation in a different light. And in that light, I, to some extent, disempower my reactive mind. I notice it. I notice it's working up in me. And empower the capital S self, or capital I within me, to act from a place of grace. And if I don't see what that action is, to breathe through it and have the patience to wait until I see what is mine to do, because divine light is in charge, doing the perfect work in the situation for the highest good of all concerned.
We don't have to know what that is. We just have to figure out what is ours to do in that situation.
Everybody knows what the particular situation now is that's going on. Your mind will remind you. Your mind's going to tell you what the particular situation is that's now click-clacking away.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking in terms of the perfect work part of that. We don't have to know what the purpose of that situation is.
Yeah, divine light is doing its perfect work in a situation that's going through your head. Mm-hmm. So somehow divine light is in charge, not you.
Then I go back to divine light. Let it happen. So what does that mean? How's it going to direct it now? You know, that's where I get confused.
Yes, what action is mine to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, when divine light is doing its perfect work from divine light, the action for you to take or not to take will arise naturally without having to agonize over it. And that action will be for the highest good of all concerned. Divine light is in charge. Divine light will provide you with that. If you don't see the action, just need to be a little patient and repeat the phrase, divine light. If you can't see what the perfect work is, that's fine. Do you have the patience to wait until you see what that perfect work is? So that in this situation now, your actions will be for the highest good of all concerned. It's a way of looking at life and holding life that keeps us grounded in our deeper spiritual self, rather than being a victim of being right, a victim of being right. These kinds of things are very personal, so you have to try it and see if it works for you. To the extent it works for you, you will naturally adopt it. To the extent it doesn't work, then you'll look for another source of spiritual strength. Hmm? It all goes back to sound vibrations. Now those were sound vibrations we just made, weren't they? Divine light is doing its perfect work for the vibrations in this situation now. The highest good, all concerned. Om. Sound vibrations, which are all vibrations of the ultimate sound that creates everything. That hmm, that hum, is the truth behind everything. Modern science also is coming to a similar conclusion. Everything is the sound. This is addressed to the scientists among us. The atoms are actually humming. The atoms are humming. God named the first man Adam. That humming became Adam. Adam. The scientists are humming atom. Atom. And underneath the atom or Adam is the humming, the om. Adam. Atom. Om. Is it a coincidence that even our electricity is measured in ohms today? Our electricity is measured in ohms today. They use an ohm meter. An ohm meter.
Actually, the ohm meter measures resistance.
Pardon?
It's a unit of resistance.
A unit of ohm is a unit of resistance. How funny. How funny. Who lives in the home? Who lives in the home? Ohm. Who's around the ohm? He. She. Who's around the ohm? And that's the truth. Om Tat Sat. Satchidananda doesn't believe in looking at the scriptures or God as something lofty. No. He believes that our spiritual, our own nature is something playful and light, like a little child. Just like Jesus understood when he said, let the children come to me, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Same teaching. All trinities are products of that own. Anyone going to the service today? Well, we can go a little longer if you like. We're almost done, unless you have want to close at 11. Shall we go a little longer? Shall we close?
Cool.
Ready to close? All right. Well, we've
it's
had
a lot to think about.
Yeah, we've had plenty for him to give us to think about.
I have one thought that keeps coming back is in this discussion is I am, which is like, that's a
I am.
And I am angry. I am sad. I am creating the energy that surrounds me. And that goes to the whatever you are fighting against, you become. Because it's the sound. It's the vibration.
We are that vibration of Om. We experienced it in Mother Earth. We experienced it in ourselves. We experienced it in the whole universe. And now as we close with the sound of Om, I suggest, as another consciousness, we hear the holy spiritual sound of the divine in all of the others who are making the sound. So as we make the sound, listen for the divine Om in all the others in the room today. Let's take three conscious breaths. with the deep listening.
Victim in this situation, maybe very peripherally of some minor things, but there are huge numbers of people who are literally victims right now, and the sound of that own for them is a cry that's been going on for centuries.
You what?
But a lot of it was gone, and it's not. It's being used. So that's what I feel. I need to be angry and fight. Not necessarily for myself, but for those victims.
Yes, can you let your anger somehow be grounded in love?
I think it is. But in order to get myself moving, there has to be something that says,
yes.
This shouldn't be.
Yes, and we were given all of our emotions, fear, love, anger. They're all natural to us for a purpose. And you're right. Anger spurs us to action. So can we use our anger to spur us to action at the same time while there is a place inside of us observing how we are making positive use of our anger. Good. Yes, all the emotions are wonderful. Anger, outrage, fear, they're all natural. Can we use them from a place of inner peace, so we notice somehow, somewhere inside of us, that anger is coming up for us, and we are using the anger in some way for the highest good of all concerned. So divine light could be doing its perfect work in filling you with anger in this situation now, for the highest good. No one concerned, why not? Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments or sharing? No, go in peace.
You are such a good person here.